and inspire our communities.
Everything looks so normal, but there's a killer in somewhere.
You know what I think?
I think we can guess.
Everyone's got secrets.
It was torture living there. We were trapped at Marble Hall.
Wouldn't have anything to do with Atticus Pund, would it?
I am conducting an official murder investigation.
I want Miri to get on with her life.
Is there something you're not telling me?
There's something you ought to know.
Hi, Chicago. I'm Mike. This is Walter, and you're watching WTTW. Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Dangerously hot weather hits the Chicago area again and snarls downtown traffic for hours.
The DuSable Lakeshore Drive Bridge goes haywire after high temps cause the metal to expand, preventing it from closing after a lift.
It's people picking the pieces up. You know, folks were treated terribly by these bad actors.
The city of Chicago sues a Southside funeral home where dozens of bodies were discovered decomposing last month. With a WBEZ Sun-Times investigation turning up a slew of failures over the years to hold the chapel owners accountable. Meantime, a former Loretto Hospital executive pleads not guilty to a sprawling COVID testing fraud scheme. Mayor Brandon Johnson announces next year's budget deficit, smaller than expected, but still nearly $900 million. And the Trump administration lifts a stop work order on a billion-dollar barrier aimed at keeping invasive carp out of the Great Lakes.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Jeff Buchholz of WBBM News Radio, freelance journalist Kim Bellware, Mariah Wolfel of WBEZ, and Manny Ramos of Block Club Chicago. Thank you all for being here.
Sure.
Let's get right to it. So it was quite the sight downtown yesterday. Jeff, from your vantage point, were you able to see any of the little bridge that could?
The little bridge that couldn't close, you
mean?
Wasn't that something? That was crazy. It's like a physics lesson come to life. Hot weather plus metal equals no one's going anywhere on the drive for like 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
And believe me, our traffic people were thrilled because everybody was tuning in like, what's going on the drive?
Kim, if there's a risk of the bridge getting stuck in the heat like that, a heat we have to expect more and more of in the coming years, you have to wonder why city officials approved that lift.
That was such a big question. You know, it was for the Spirit of Chicago cruise liner to get through. Everybody's wondering, was it worth it? But this is a question that we're going to have to keep confronting because temperatures are going to keep getting hotter, it seems.
Yeah, I just have to say, I happened to be passing over that bridge one day before, and I was very happy not to be doing so yesterday.
I was on Lakeshore Drive going to Navy Pier, and I had to get off for gas.
Oh, dear.
And then that's when it happened.
Oh, no.
I got off at North Avenue, luckily, and did not get stuck on the bridge, and I was very happy.
And Manny, hopefully you were marked safe from the bridge.
Completely. I'm so happy for that. But I do feel for the folks that were stuck there, missing appointments or missing wherever they needed to be.
Yeah, it's such a an artery to get around the city that it's kind of funny to look at, but not so fun if you're stuck on there.
And we have a lot of those lifting bridges too.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And there was another bridge that got stuck on the south side,
right?
As well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is going to be an issue in the coming years, and it may get less and less funny each time. All right, Mariah, you and your colleague Mitch Armantrout, you dug into the record of that South Chicago chapel where bodies were found decomposing, the facility in disarray. The owners, had a long history of documented problems. Why does it seem like it sort of slipped through the cracks for so long?
Yeah, I talked to former Inspector General Joe Ferguson, who kind of has a good handle on, the municipal and state government bodies involved here. And he kind of explained it as like, everyone is doing their core missions of their agency. There are so many agencies that oversee funeral homes, crematories, and then just buildings in general in the city of Chicago. And all of those agencies are so focused on their, specific mission, there was very little communication. So our reporting just looked at records to see all of these different red flags across agencies, liens on the owner's property, failure to pay property taxes on their building, failed building inspections by the city of Chicago for mundane things like not having smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, you know, some of those more like regulatory, maybe boring violations, to the very severe violations of having their crematory shut down in 2025. And so we were raising the questions and putting all of the information out there, but I think those are questions that state legislators and the city of Chicago are going to have to come together and answer of what is communication and collaboration going to look like going forward for such a high-stakes industry.
Yeah, obviously something that's so close to so many families during a difficult time. You know, those owners, you mentioned the city, they're now facing a lawsuit from the city of Chicago. What's that case alleging?
Yeah, so what we found, we looked at building department inspections throughout the few decades that where records were available. And from 2006 to 2021, the city was doing annual inspections of this building. This is before the Morgans bought the building in 2023, but still regular inspections that were almost all of them were failed for, like I said, minor violations. The city tried to take the owners at the time to court in 2016. It's long been a funeral home. So those annual failed inspections should have raised red flags for the city to say, hey, this is a building that, you know, clearly has a history of neglect, of, you know, neglectful owners, and maybe we should take a harder look at it. Instead, from 2022 to 2026, there was zero annual building inspections at the building. The buildings department kind of alluded to the fact that they've switched to a more complaint-based or priority-based system, an understaffed department like many across the city. But still, you have to wonder, you know, there's this building. The entire time the Morgans were operating there, there wasn't a building inspection of the building. And, you know, hindsight's 2020, we can't predict what that could have stopped, but it was just another agency that could have maybe intervened.
Yeah, hopefully this is the kind of thing that can spark change, you know, down the road. Manny, another case this week centering on, you know, public trust, allegations of, you know, serious violations. This is one of the former Loretto Hospital executives that is caught up in a COVID testing case. Remind us who he is and how he plead.
Yeah, so ex-CFO, COO Anash Ahmed was extradited from Serbia back to Chicago last week, where he faces a pair of federal indictments. And just to quickly catch folks up on what those indictments are, the first one, he's facing accusations that he embezzled $15 million out of the cash-strapped hospital on the west side. The second indictment comes in regards to a scheme to defraud the federal government of nearly $700 million through fake COVID-19 testing. He appeared in front of a federal judge on Monday where he pled not guilty to those crimes. He also pled not guilty to the first indictment last Friday. But, you know, he also didn't challenge his current detention at the Metropolitan Correction Center in downtown. Now, U.S. State, or I'm sorry, his defense attorney, Dan Webb, former U.S. attorney, for the Northern District of Illinois, said that, you know, they plan on holding the right to sort of like, you know, challenge that detention at a later time, but they're in the process of trying to resolve this as quickly as possible. What does that look like? Unknown at this time. He mentioned, trying to hint that they might work out some type of deal with the prosecution team, and also hinted at the fact that they might look to dismiss the case under the fallout of the Broadview 6 case.
Yeah, that grand jury's having a, you know, kind of a long tail, but, you know, it seems like in this instance, at least from the outside, there is a, you know, significant amount of evidence that prosecutors have brought to bear, fair to say?
I think so. I mean, there's countless, you know, they have wire frauds indicating that, you know, these transactions were happening. But of course, that's all going to be handled in the court, whether or not they come out with a deal. I will say, you know, some of his co-defendants have worked out pleas with the prosecution team. I mean, you have the ex-CEO, George Miller, who was accused of accepting nearly $700 million in bribes. He accepted a sort of, you know, deferred prosecution agreement. As long as he sort of follows the terms for the next year or so, that will be dropped. Another CTO, Heather Bergdahl, she accepted a similar plea, or a similar agreement, I should say. So these cases are kind of getting ramped up.
Yeah, it seems like the, you know, some of these potentially, you know, heading to trial. You know, do we know about the schedule for Ahmed's case?
Ahmed's case, the next time he is at a court hearing, I think it's in two September 10th, I want to say.
Okay.
And then his co-defendant, who also is, you know, accused of partnering with this, is in October.
Well, a long-running scandal there, and one Block Club has been following closely. Will continue to do so. Jeff, it seems like just about every resident of the city of Chicago has announced a run for mayor, except for the incumbent himself. Sounds like there could be some movement on that in just a couple of days.
Yeah, and I know, Nick, you were planning to invite the mayor over to your place on September 13th. It sounds like he's busy that day.
We're going to have ribs. Come on.
I don't know what to tell you, man. His political arm sent an email out to supporters asking people if they want to make history by attending an announcement on Sunday, September 13th at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And as my former colleague and friend of this show, Craig Delamore, reminded me, you do things on Sunday when you want to get into the paper on Monday. So it's a fairly safe bet that the mayor is going to take another run at this. And he has certainly sounded, and Mariah has been in as many of these briefings as I have, he's certainly sounded like a guy who wants to keep the job that he has, based on the talking points that we hear him deliver all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it starts by saying, well, I'm focused on building a bigger, better, stronger, safer Chicago. But if I were to run, it seems that voters would certainly have a good reason to reelect me in some language like that. And then goes on to tout that crime is down, that they've invested in affordable housing, and Johnson's long list of what he sees as his accomplishments.
Yeah, well, I think we'll see it in the paper on Monday.
You're probably right.
On this show, what Craig says goes.
Yes, that's correct.
But I mean, you know, Kim, were you surprised to see the mayor take this long to announce another run, or was he maybe just kind of waiting for the, you know, the cavalcade of other folks to get out of the way?
I think I was as surprised as anybody that it's taken so long, and also as you've seen the war chest that's being built up by those seeking to replace him. You know, he's much further behind than some of these better funded candidates that have already thrown their hat into the ring. So it's, you know, you're kind of wondering. But we also know from when he first won office, he had the backing of the Chicago Teachers Union, and he was far outspent by his opponent, Paul Vallis, and he still took it because they had good discipline, good organization. So he did prove that money isn't everything. So maybe he's, you know, sleeping easy knowing that he has that support to count on.
Well, and he reminds us of that about every chance he gets, that he was outspent 3-1 and he's the mayor of Chicago. And Kim's right. The Chicago Teachers Union organization is going to give him a massive ground game and a machine-like political organization run by his good friend, Stacey Davis Gates, the head of that union, and the Illinois Federation of Teachers.
Yeah.
But it is looking like he may be losing SEIU support, which also gave him millions in his first campaign. Obviously, he's boosted a little bit by just his name recognition and his record. And, you know, he has the advantage of being an incumbent. But SEIU also came with foot soldiers who knocked on doors and phone banked. And so that's a big question of where SEIU is going to throw its support.
But the money thing is a real thing. Like, the most recent D2s that we pulled, he's got about $600,000 in cash in his campaign fund. Alexi Janulius is up over 20. Even Joe Holberg, who was like the first guy to get in, has like $1 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, at some point the money has to happen. And, you know, he doesn't seem to be all that concerned about it, but we'll see.
He has to be able to get on TV. He's going to have to be on TV. He's going to have to be, you know, for lack of a better word, trashing his opponents.
Right.
And he is going to have to speak about why he is better. And that just takes money. And you just, to Kim's point, lose daylight every day you wait to announce, because you can't start fundraising like in earnest until you announce.
Right. Yeah.
And I just want to say, like, I mean, all of that to add on to that, he's doing it on the opener of the Chicago Bears season. And I may be a huge homer here, but I feel like that's going to take the wind out of his sails a little bit, because there's going to be so much excitement going into this season. And when you want to sort of dominate that Monday cycle, if the Bears come out really strong, does that challenge that at all?
Oh, geez, I didn't even think it's a tailgate party. That didn't even occur to me.
There you go.
Maybe I'm wrong about this.
See? This is why we need Manny's insights on the panel here. You're welcome to be a homer for the Bears on the show. That's totally fine. Well, one of the things that the mayor is touting in his official capacity is that this year's budget deficit is $882 million. Not pretty, but less than expected. He's kind of taking that as a win, fair to say.
Yeah, that's definitely how he's painting it. And, you know, it's interesting because usually with mayors, you see them announce a really big deficit their first year to kind of blame their predecessor. And then you kind of see that shrink year after year. Johnson has, you know, kind of, he's refused to cut services. He's invested a lot in youth programming and violence intervention, and he has struggled to work with the city council to cut that deficit. And so the reality is that the city is now facing, again, one of the largest deficits since we started seeing structural deficits in the city about two and a half decades ago. And so, yeah, it's not, you know, $1.2 billion like it was last year, but $882 million is a lot, and it's going to be another really contentious, really tough budget season. He's going to try again to push for progressive revenue. He's going to face pushback.
And the mayor's budget forecast message was really clear about, again, sort of the talking points about his reelection run. My stuff worked, their stuff didn't. Mm-hmm. The progressive revenue options that he likes, the social media tax and that kind of thing, has all made more money than expected. Everything proposed by what's now known as the Budget Accountability Coalition did not. Of course, the Budget Accountability Coalition couldn't let that go and said, the reason our stuff didn't make any money is because you put a brick on it, basically, right, even though it's part of the budget. Therefore, it's a city ordinance that you have to follow. So it certainly doesn't look as though we're going to have any kind of a kumbaya moment at City Hall when it comes to the budget, which means that, you know, Mariah and I are probably going to still be working right up to Christmas, getting a budget, watching them try to put a budget together.
The only thing you can hope for is that everyone's going to be on their best behavior, because it's an election year and aldermen are up for reelection too. And so they're all walking political tightropes right now, especially when voters are affordability is a winning message, and that's certainly going to play a role.
Yep.
Well, I very much wish that for you, my friends, but I'm not necessarily going to hold my breath. All right, Kim, this week Indiana's governor officially announced the launch of an investigation of the power company NIPSCO after some residents went without electricity for weeks after really damaging storms. What's he looking to find out here?
Yeah, he's looking to find out really what the utility's obligation is, how much they had been staying on top of maintenance. That was the big issue. Was it their responsibility to do things like shrubbage, you know, foliage clearing, kind of maintaining some of these areas, because we had trees falling on power lines, we had utility poles that were snapping. I mean, obviously, this is something that kept the entire city in the dark for more than 2 weeks in some cases. Some people, I think, are still struggling to get reconnected because there are final points of power delivery that the individual homeowner is responsible for. But all the while, NIPSCO has also been increasing rates, and the governor is surely hearing from his constituents in the northwest part of the state that they're very unhappy that they're getting this, you know, what they perceive to be this really bad service, the utility not maintaining its obligations that led to how severe this was. And on top of that, they're being asked to pay more. Yeah. As a former NIPSCO customer, I can just say, I've seen those rates rise for the past two decades, and you know, they don't seem to be flatlining at any point. So the governor really wants to figure out, you know, where is this money going and how are you maintaining this utility for this community?
Yeah, and of course, a lot of, you know, Gary and some of the surrounding communities, you know, faced historic disinvestment. So that, you know, that has effect on infrastructure as well.
I was surprised when I was in Gary a couple of weeks ago, talking to residents at the big relief event that Keith Lee, the food influencer, put together. Mm-hmm. And on my drive there, I was surprised at the condition of a lot of the trees in those neighborhoods. They just, you know, in here, we get used to seeing
dry rotted.
We get used to seeing ComEd crews and the city forestry department is on it, you know, trimming trees back all the time. None of that appears to have happened in some of these neighborhoods around this park where this thing happened. I was really surprised.
And it's such a big city relative to, you know, the population now. It's not as dense, but Gary covers a lot of area, and especially if you're out more near the county line and, you know, further from the city center, like, things were looking pretty rough, and that's still NIPSCO's responsibility.
Yeah, be very interesting to see what this investigation potentially turns up, some change maybe in the offing. All right, jumping back to the Chicago mayoral race, Mariah, John Kelly is under investigation, I should say, by the Ethics Board for campaign videos in fire stations, which pretty clearly seems to violate prohibitions against using public property for politicking. But he's still making some visits there. It seems like there's a bit of a workaround he sees.
Yeah, WTTW has been reporting on this and keeping track of it greatly. It looks like that he is still making videos that involve fire department stations, but is maybe blurring out the logo, which I don't know constitutes as not using city property for campaign video. So we'll see how that ethics.
You got to give him points for creativity, though. And the mayor's also facing an ethics hearing in city council for some of these World Business Chicago tourism videos. His critics, or at least Alders who are skeptical, say they sort of amount to campaign ads, essentially.
Yeah. So, and to be clear, ethics committee is different than the ethics board, which is an official investigation into John Kelly. What happened here was that this week, eight of Johnson's most vocal critics on the city council, who also serve on the ethics committee, sent a letter to the ethics committee chair, Matt Martin, and said, we have questions about this series of videos that World Business Chicago, which is a public-private entity, they get public funding from the city, but also, you know, private funding, and they're the city's tourism or economic development arm, chaired by the mayor. They have released a series of videos. Some of them are narrated by Johnson touting economic development. You know, they defend that as Johnson is the city's elected leader, and he is a appropriate narrator, and our job is to drive economic development in Chicago. So yeah, we're going to brag about the accomplishments of the past 4 years. Critics say this is using taxpayer funding to kind of save money on campaign videos that can be shared by the campaign and were shared by Brandon Johnson's campaign, political account, I should say.
World Business Chicago is not a new development.
Right.
I mean, Rich Daley invented World Business Chicago in 2000, and it, for a long time, has had this sort of murky, the sort of public-private partnership thing has always been a little bit murky about who are they really marketing. And indeed, a lot of the questions about these ads are, well, they don't feel like ads directed at getting business to come here. It feels more like touting stuff in the city. And when reporters ask...
The audience is internal.
Right, yes, right. That's exactly it.
And the call is coming from inside the house. Yeah.
And when reporters asked the mayor about it last week, he was like, how can we tell people what's great about Chicago if we don't show them what's great about Chicago, in essence?
Right. Yeah, it would be very interesting to see if anything comes of that committee hearing.
Yeah, it'll be a subject matter hearing, most likely, where they'll hear from, ideally, World Business Chicago, and I don't know that much will come of it.
I look forward to reading your coverage of it. All right, Kim, the Trump administration has finally lifted a stop work order on that barrier aimed at keeping invasive carp out of the Great Lakes. You know, the president's certainly no fan of some Great Lakes governors, for example, our own. Yeah. But I mean, do you think there's just such an economic component to this? Do you think that the damage that the collapse of the Great Lakes could cause, you know, maybe, which would also hurt, you know, certainly some of the president's own supporters, could that have played a part in finally swaying this, or did they just lose attention?
I mean, we don't know why the stop work order was issued by the Army Corps of Engineers, why they stopped this work. And then on the same day, our Governor Pritzker sends a letter, and then also Governor Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, who has maybe a hot and cold relationship, but certainly more than a absolutely frozen relationship that Pritzker has.
Right.
You know, she enjoys a better relationship with Trump. She makes the call. That's probably what he's responding to, not to Pritzker's letter. So was it that there was someone the president is willing to listen to that was persuaded by that? But some of the president's decision making is just so erratic that even when we know that it's going to cause economic harm, it doesn't always prompt the quick action that you think it will. You know, it's good that the order has been lifted, but also we've been fighting invasive carp for more than 15 years. Mm-hmm. This is the closest they've been upstream, I think, since 2010. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it could absolutely devastate the, you know, economy of the region if they get in here. And it was the right call, but there's just so much unknown when you can't really count on these decision makers being transparent about the decisions or when they make the changes to them.
Yeah, but I think a lot of folks very happy to see that project back up and running. Manny, the federal judge just this week refused to kick out the case of a Border Patrol agent accused of sexual assaults. That indictment came from the same grand jury that you mentioned with Broadview 6, with Loretto. Does it feel like the long tail of that really troubled grand jury is hasn't quite fully revealed itself Could this, you know, continue to complicate things for federal judges, prosecutors, defendants?
It definitely does feel that way, especially as we're talking about everything that's ICE related at this time. But more than that, I mean, this case is also affecting, you know, the Verletto case, which is an offshoot of the Broadview 6 and the grand jury. You know, for example, when Anash Ahmed, the CFO that we were just talking about, you know, when he was brought back from Serbia, they had to file a new indictment with a new grand jury just to kind of avoid any kind of missteps in that regard. So I imagine this is an issue that's going to plague the department for a while.
Yeah, and this, I mean, this case of this Border Patrol agent, it's really, you know, if the charges are proved, it's really severe.
It's really terrible, yeah. And it certainly goes along with the what city and state leaders have talked about in terms of the sort of wide path that Operation Midway Blitz caused in this area. The governor even referred to it this week in responding to President Trump's messages on social media about crime in Chicago and detailing that and suggesting that the president makes it hard to tamp down violence.
Yeah, no love lost there between the two of them, but nope. It's all love here at this table. But unfortunately, we are out of time. So our thanks to Jeff Buchholz, Kim Bellware, Mariah Wolfel, and Manny Ramos. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family. The Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for all of us here at The Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, Jeff, there's a new proposal out of City Council aimed at delivery drivers. What are the details?
Well, first of all, show of hands, who does 1 hour delivery on Amazon?
No?
Okay. All right.
Once in a while, in a pinch. I'll admit it.
This is what they're talking about. Julia Ramirez, who's the older woman from the Southwest side, has raised concerns about delivery drivers who don't really know the areas they're driving in, you know, speeding in their, sometimes their personal cars, dropping stuff off and speeding out. And there are families walking in these areas. And the concern is that these workers are trying to meet impossible quotas by not only Amazon, but third-party delivery companies, right? And so
closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports inclusionary excellence throughout the legal profession. PBS NewsHour, next on WTTW.
Reynard Lennox, a very famous film director.
Ooh, someone's literally trying to scare him to death.
My magnum opus, filmed here.
Stay back, stay back.
He was stabbed through the heart.
What now?
Shakespeare and Hathaway.
Saturday at 7 on WTTW.
On Masterpiece Mystery.
We all know what has to be done. We must never tell.
It's Lady Chalfont. She's dead.
This will be my last case.
There might have been something unnatural about her death.
Susan Ryland. Believe me, she's troubled.
In order to protect yourself, you need to move quickly.
I wonder who will be murdered next. Yes.
Marble Hall Murders on Masterpiece Mystery.
Sunday at 8 on WTTW.
You could win a trip to Africa in WTTW's 2026 Be a Winner sweepstakes. Follow the annual wildlife migration routes through Kenya and Tanzania on a 16-day escorted tour from Road Scholar. Track the Big Five across the Serengeti Plains, the Masai Mara, and the Mount Kilimanjaro region. Airfare is included. Visit WTTW.com/sweepstakes for your chance to win.
Hello, and thanks for joining us.
The night before he died, he had said to me, we're due, and we're due for something big.
The Man Who Knew. Watch Frontline.
Tuesday at 9 on WTTW.
When I first came to Michigan Tech, I had no idea how far it would take me. I made friends, studied hard, and had more than a few challenges along the way. But there was never a day that I didn't feel supported by the people around me. Because of Tech, I'm ready for whatever the future brings.
WTTW programming originates from the Rene Crown Public Media Center. Programming on WTTW is made possible in part by the Walsh Group.
Chicago, my name is Baba Q, and you're watching WTTW.
Good evening, I'm Jeff Bennett. I'm the Navaz's on assignment. On the NewsHour tonight, the U.S. job market remains resilient in the face of global economic pressures, but wages aren't keeping pace with inflation. A mistrial is declared in the Lindsey Clancy case after jurors are unable to reach a verdict.
Light has been shed on this very little understood and woefully under-resourced mental disorder of postpartum psychosis.
And the first mail ballots for the midterm elections are sent out, even while legal challenges to President Trump's voting restrictions play out in the courts.
Major funding for the PBS NewsHour has been provided by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. For more than 50 years, advancing ideas and supporting institutions to promote a better world at Hewlett.org.
A life with impact in this moment and into the future. A Raymond James advisor can help craft a wealth plan with your goals for today and all the possibilities of tomorrow in mind. Raymond James.
Friends of